from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out what's going on and what's coming up at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel.
I'll find out what's going on and coming up at the Bonna Thompson Center in Irvington.
And then I'll chat with Indiana's next poet laureate, Karen Kovacic, about the work she's doing with the Writers' Center. And we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. In its first full season and with all theaters open and running, the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel has a lot to celebrate, but it has also had some significant challenges as well during this past year. Travis DiNicola sat down with the center's interim executive director, Frank Basile, and with the Great American Songbook Foundation director, Doris Ann Sadler, to find out more.
If you will, sort of update us on where things are with the center. You're the interim executive director,
right.
And I know that the center's been, you know, in its second year, its first full season right now, tackling some great shows and doing some great work, but there's also some questions. How are things going on up there?
Well, they're going fine, Travis. We had a great introduction with Tony Bennett for our new season, and just prior to that, we had the great PBS special with Michael Feinstein.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
And now we're into the season, and matter of fact, we have a great holiday program coming up with the Vienna Boys Choir November 25th,
mm-hmm.
And we have the Indiana Wind Symphony, which is one of our resident companies. We'll be doing Holiday Memories with Jocelyn Anderson, and that's on December 2nd. We'll be having Chanticleer at the Center at the Palladium on December 4th, A Christmas Carol by the Carmel Repertory Theater, and so on and so forth. So we have a lot of things going on from the operation of the
Center.
Well,
and all the spaces are open now.
Yes, and all of the spaces. We have three venues.
Right. I mean, last year when we would talk about the center, often it was really just about the Palladium,
correct.
Which was the only
that's
thing
right.
that had opened yet. But now we've got the studio, we've got the Tarkington, we've got the other theaters involved.
Right. Correct. We had three theaters, and we have five resident companies actually involved with the studio and the Tarkington,
mm-hmm.
the Carmel Repertory Theater, the Actors Theater of Indiana, the Gregory Hancock Dance Ensemble, the Central Indiana Dance Ensemble, and, of course, the Civic Theater. In
yeah.
fact, the Civic Theater had a wonderful grand opening at the Tarkington about a month ago with the Drowsy Chaperone.
I heard many people say that they thought it was the best show that the Civic's ever done.
It was outstanding.
Yeah.
And they have another great production, Amadeus, coming mm-hmm. up in a week or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and
they're doing
fantastic.
Great things in their new venue.
And Travis, who was the star of the Drowsy Chaperone,
mm-hmm.
the winner, Julia Binet, the first competition for the Michael Feinstein Foundation.
That's right.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't
I did not
that,
realize
isn't that.
That's
spectacular.
A great tie-in.
What a great tie-in to the affiliation with what we're doing, and the fact that Civic had her up there was just really fun to see it all come together.
That is very cool. Excellent. So definitely, so lots of good stuff. And Frank, I interrupted you. You were about to go on about operations and such.
Well, and of course, one of the questions frequently asked,
mm-hmm.
What about a new CEO? Well, the search has begun. And the first thing we're
doing... So you're not just going to do this for...
That's correct.
Okay.
Right. That's right. There's a light at the
you
end
You are
of the
an
tunnel.
Interim here. Okay.
That's why I'm having a good time doing it, because I know that it will come to an end. And maybe later rather than sooner.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, we are now searching for a search firm in order to do it. We've sent out requests for proposals. We will be getting some proposals in, and then the committee will meet again to select the search firm. And I estimate it'll probably be 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
And I've been doing it for a couple of months, which means that my tenure will be about 6 months. But hopefully we'll be ready to move forward.
So maybe by next summer, perhaps?
Yes.
If not sooner, that should be able to announce something.
Yes. But in the interim, mm-hmm. I've really got a great senior team,
yes.
which has really been responsible for taking the center to where it is now. So we still have all of that institutional knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that includes Doris Ann right here.
Yes. Yes. Now, Doris Ann, I mean, your role in this has been really kind of exciting and unique. Explain it to me a bit.
Well, I'm the executive director of the Michael Feinstein Initiative. It's the new name of it. We've changed from foundation to initiative to really tell people about the fact that we're forward moving. We're not just preserving the past. Okay. This music lives on. The Great American Songbook lives on. So I've been with the initiative for about 4.5 years. Actually, I started it with Michael. And, you know, over time, we've grown, we've developed our programming. And it first came to fruition in January when we moved into our beautiful space on the upper level of the Palladium. But then on June 1st, we actually had a full merger with the Center for the Performing Arts, and that has just been incredible. You know, I did most of this by myself for the first few years, and you work for a nonprofit, so you know how tough it is to get staffing. Well, now I have access to the entire staff and the senior leadership team and marketing and publicity and development through the center. And because of that, we've been able to grow leaps and bounds in just a few months. And leading right into our second exhibit opening, which happened October 2nd, G.I. Jive, the Music and Entertainers of World War II.
Now, and I want to get to that in just a moment, but just to sort of let me quickly summarize and tell me if I'm off here in any way. Michael Feinstein, who's also the artistic director for the Center for the Performing Arts, and including the Palladium, also has, as you mentioned before, it used to be called a foundation, now it's an initiative of the Great American Songbook, which is essentially, it started out as his personal collection of just all sorts of ephemera and memorabilia of whether it be actual sheet music from the Great American Song to recordings or what have you. And it really a museum quality collection that he had put together over the years. And sort of the whole idea was to be able to both have him and have his artistic inspiration involved with the center, but then also have his collection up there. Is that...
That's absolutely dead on, Travis. But what's really exciting is that even though Michael's collection is the core, what's happened is that all of these collectors, both family members and just private collectors all over the country, have noticed what we're doing.
Yeah.
And they've started giving us their collection. So 35,000 pieces of sheet music from a collector in San Francisco, the Andrews Sisters collection from Frederick, Maryland, an LP collection from the jazz critic from the Wall Street Journal. And we've got about four collections that we're talking to donors right now to arrange to come in. And we just, so much fun. Richard Whiting, who wrote Hooray for Hollywood and The Good Ship Lollipop. His daughter, Margaret Whiting, was a very famous singer. We were given Richard's piano that he wrote all of that fabulous music on. And so we're going to be unveiling that the latter part of November. And Debbie Whiting, his granddaughter, is a big supporter of ours. So to me, what is
this
most
is great.
Exciting...
I didn't realize that you were bringing in all these extra pieces. Now, do you guys have room for that?
Well, that's a great question. We outgrew our space the day we moved in. Now we've annexed space across the other side of the Palladium. There was some storage space, so we're okay for the moment.
Okay.
But we do really have long-term plans to have a separate standalone building because we are already the premier repository for all of the Great American Songbook, no different than the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Country Music Hall of Fame. What we are doing here is going to catapult Carmel, Indiana, Central Indiana into this new world, and people are coming here. It'll be a destination.
I mean, it sounds like you could really envision this whole sort of separate building with permanent exhibits, traveling exhibits, and so on.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, that takes a very long time to do, and the fundraising involved, but we're already beginning to think along those lines.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about G.I. Jive, the exhibit that did just open in the Feinstein Gallery space. Because
Lisa Lobdell, our archivist, and I were really looking at our archive and thinking, what do we have to show people to tell the story? Because this is more than just about the music. It's about history and culture. And we had the Andrews Sisters collection, and we had Hy Zarrett's collection, who wrote Unchained Melody, but he also was a writer for the U.S. Army. So we started putting this exhibit together and realized that you couldn't talk about this music during World War II without talking about the USO. And I remembered that Linda Hope, Bob Hope's daughter, is a friend of Michael Feinstein, so we got in touch with her, and she said, She'd be delighted to come and cut the ribbon on this exhibit. She loaned us a golf club of Bob Hope's and some other things. And we had this beautiful exhibit.
And you guys had your opening October 2nd?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
And we had a great event that we had a show, a USO camp show, and we had lots of World War II veterans there who were doing the jitterbug out on the floor. It was just great. Now, the exhibit will be open for at least 6 months before we change to another exhibit. So we're open during the day from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. every day of the week. And then we're open about an hour before the Great American Songbook Series shows and during intermission. So, and then by appointment, if you need to come in on a Saturday, I or one of my staff members will come down and meet you if you have a tour group. Just get in touch with us. But it's really fun to listen to this music and understand how important it is to American history and culture.
And again, anytime someone's coming to a show at the Palladium, they can check things out. Is that right?
Well, we're not open for every show.
Okay.
But we're expanding our hours and we'll add the jazz series next. So just trying to make, identify our audience, our likely audience to come in. But we'll keep expanding hours, so keep checking back.
Very good, very good. And it's so exciting that you have this element of the physical exhibit as well as the educational outreach that's part of the programming that you're doing up there, along with the performances as well.
That's right. One of our most exciting projects has been and is continuing to be the High School Vocal Academy and Competition. We've had it for 2 years. Our first year winner, as I said, Julia Binet, has gone on to IU and has performed at the Civic. Our second year winner, Annie Yoakum from Chicago, is a freshman at Carnegie Mellon studying musical theater. This year, we're expanding to an addition to 7 states in the Midwest that we've done in the past: New York City, California, Arizona, Nevada. This is a 3-year plan to go completely national. We're taking a regional approach so that we have many academies in each region, and winners from those regional academies will then come to Carmel to do their master classes and workshops over a number of days. We're doing it again in conjunction with the University of Indianapolis, who are just fabulous partners. We love them. And at the end of this 5-day competition, we have a winner selected after a show, and that winner not only wins scholarship money, but gets to go to New York City and sing at Feinstein's at the Regency.
How fun
is that? These kids are just, wow. So
yeah.
We love it. It's been one of the most fun projects that we've done, and it's continuing to grow.
That's really great to have that connection, of course, with Michael Feinstein and his cabaret club in New York. One thing I was just really pleased about during one of the more recent First Fridays, I was walking down Mass Avenue and saw Michael Feinstein walking down the street.
That's
so he's becoming a part of our community as well, which is fantastic.
He really is. He considers this, he's a busy guy and he travels a lot and performs, but he really loves coming to Indiana. He feels so at home here. And it is fun to see him walking through places and people are shaking his hand and walking over and talking to him. And he feels at home here.
That's excellent. Excellent. Frank, I want to ask you a question that has been on the minds of many people I know. And that is, for many years, you've been a wonderful patron as well as a volunteer with so many different arts organizations, as well as other organizations, but the Indianapolis Arts Center, the Phoenix Theater, the Opera here at WFYI. But now, and you were, of course, a patron and a board member up at the Palladium, but now here you are as an executive director. And even if it is interim, how's that going for you? Are there surprises? Is it what you expected? What's it like being an administrator now?
Well, nobody told me that it was quite a bit different from being on a board and actually running the organization.
Yeah, I might know a few executive directors who've been wanting to ask you this.
In fact, I've talked to several of the executive directors, and I said, why didn't you tell me what this involved? And because when you attend a board meeting, you go home or go wherever to your office, and that's it. You don't think about it that much between. But when you're the executive director, you live with it. And, of course, you're the executive director, so you know that. But I have to tell you, it's exciting.
Good.
And it's nice to be back in the action again. And we were talking about Michael Feinstein. It's fun to work alongside him. And, of course, he sets the artistic direction for our organization.
Of course.
So it really is a lot of fun to do. And as I said before, partially because I know that it's only on an interim basis.
So beyond the fact that it does certainly follow you wherever you go, and you can't just leave it behind at the board meeting, has there been a moment where you sort of thought, oh, now I get that, or something that you learned, or maybe something that surprised you about the role you've taken on?
Well, you know, yes. We
that you can share with us?
I'm glad you add that. As I said before, when you're a board member, you leave, and that's kind of it. You set the budget and so on. Uh-huh. But suddenly, when you're there day in and day out, you know that that budget that you passed, that everybody voted on at the board meeting, now you have to live with. In every number in there, you take a look at the, for example, the revenue number. Mm-hmm. You know that you have to hit those ticket sales. You take a look at the development number. You know you've got to raise that money. And now I'm seeing the importance of having a real strong development team, a strong mm-hmm. marketing team, and all of the other areas, and also having these board committees who work together to accomplish the goals. So it's not a matter of going to a meeting and then leaving, but mm-hmm. you're living with it day in and day out in accomplishing those goals that are set.
And
but again,
how
that's part of the challenge, but right. that's also part of the fun of doing it.
Well,
frankly.
It sounds like you're having fun, and yeah. I know that that everyone that I know certainly knew that you were up to the challenge and are glad to see that you're enjoying it as well.
Well, I have to say some days are better than other days.
So what, just from a purely from an audience standpoint, Frank, what are you really looking forward to seeing in the near future that's going to be on the stages up at the center?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, we have a great holiday program coming up, mm-hmm. and I mentioned some of the great shows that we have that we really are excited about. And we love the fact that we have 6 or 7 series, different series, dance,
sure.
jazz, songbook, country, bluegrass, and so on. And it's exciting to reach out to those niches. And for me personally, it's fun to be exposed to areas that I really haven't in the past. For example, you know where I was last night?
Hmm.
It was called the Chinese Acrobats.
Oh, I hear they're fantastic.
They were fantastic. And I was there especially because we were kicking off that called the Spotlight Series, and I wanted to recognize our great sponsor for that. Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, I enjoyed the program, which probably I would not have gone to had it not been at the Palladium.
Well, there you
so
are.
It was fun to do that. So I'm being exposed to so many new areas and music genres that I really had not thought about before.
Well, that's excellent. Excellent. Very good. Very good. Doris Ann, let me ask you, any shows that you're particularly excited about getting a chance to see in the near future?
Well, Michael Feinstein and Bernadette Peters, I
yeah.
have to tell you, I love her. Of course, it goes without mm-hmm. saying I love Michael. But to have them on stage together is...
And that's in February,
that's
right?
in February, but I have a feeling
that's
it's going to sell out quickly.
Yeah.
So make sure you get your tickets. I think that'll be fantastic. I would agree with Frank. You know, one of the exciting things about the programming at the center is that not only are there the big names that we all know and recognize, but we try to bring in some of the newer cutting edge artists that perhaps you haven't heard of or you don't mm-hmm. know about, but are really high quality. So that mix is kind of exciting. Christine Ebersole in the studio mm-hmm. to have that small 200 seat. And of course, I'm a cabaret girl.
Sure.
And that's, you know, fun to see it in a smaller setting, more intimate setting like that. And having all those three theaters to offer different ways to bring things in and have a more intimate setting when it's appropriate. What better things could you ask for?
Well, there you are.
You know, I was just thinking further answer to your question. You were talking about some of the upcoming programs. Of course,
yes.
We have Bill Cosby
mm-hmm.
coming up in mid-April. In fact, if you want to lift on tax day, April 15th, come out to the Palladium and see Bill Cosby. There's Dwight Yoakam and Herbie Hancock, Ronnie Millsap, and some really neat, mm-hmm. again, a variety of entertainers.
Oh, yeah, and I noticed Ballet Memphis, great ballet yes, company that'll right. be at the Tarkington. Then.
Travis DiNicola with the Center for the Performing Arts, Interim Executive Director Frank Basile, and the Great American Songbook Foundation Director Doris Ann Sadler. You can get the complete schedule for all the events at the Palladium, the Tarkington, and the Studio Theater at thecenterfortheperformingarts.org. thecenterfortheperformingarts.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Lovers of Indianapolis history know that Butler University used to call Irvington home. Though there's not a lot of physical evidence of the Bulldogs left in this East Side community, there's a deep and broad history, and a lot of it is housed at the Bonnet Thompson Memorial Center at 5350 East University Avenue. Sharon recently learned more from Steve Barnett, executive director of the Bonnet Thompson Center, Shar Ottinger, participant in the annual Irvington Gathering of Artists, and Paul Diebold, author of Greater Irvington, Architecture, People, and Places on the Indianapolis East Side.
Butler came to Irvington in 1875 and stayed until 1928. And the campus was of the western portion of the community. Emerson Avenue was the west side of it, Butler Avenue the east side of it. Hinkle Fieldhouse, in a sense, started at Butler in Irvington. Butler basketball started in Irvington. And the Bulldogs started in Irvington. Tony Hinkle came in 1921 and started coaching basketball as assistant, and then in 1926 became head coach, and the rest was history.
Hmm. Did Butler move because it outgrew the land in Irvington?
Basically, that was the reason. They felt landlocked. Plus, they were bordered by two train tracks, and of course, in the 1920s, trains were coming through much more rapidly than they are today. So they decided to move up north to what was then former Fairview Park,
mm-hmm.
and had left a campus of about 40 acres to go to a campus of around close to almost 300 acres.
Wow!
But even today, they need space.
That's right. Such wonderful history of the former campus, though, as you drive the streets, the winding streets, some of the homes that, as I understand, were originally fraternity or sorority houses, and, of course, the library, which was built when?
The Bonnet Thompson Library was built in 1903 as a memorial to Bonnet Thompson, who was a graduate of Butler who tragically died of typhoid.
Hmm.
And her family donated the property and the funds to build the library building. That's the only remaining Butler building in Irvington. But like you mentioned, the streets are lined with Butler history in Greek houses and faculty houses that still exist. And on
street names recognizing donors to the then campus.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The Butler campus, the old campus area, Atherton Drive, is named for Butler's financial secretary back in the 40s and 30s. And but the winding streets in Irvington, you can get a good sense of what Butler history was like when the campus was alive in Irvington.
You know, all three of you have close ties to Irvington. Irvington seems to inspire a great deal of loyalty. Paul, in researching your book, did you find... reasons for that? What is it about Irvington that there seems to be a magnet? Once people go there, they don't leave.
It's interesting. When I completed the book in 1997, I found people were ordering it from Hawaii, Florida, Colorado, South Africa, all kinds of places, and the loyalty is fierce. And I think you do see this, to be honest. I think you do see this in other parts of town, Speedway, Beech Grove, and I ascribe it to the fact that these places were always recognized as distinctive places.
How do you mean?
I mean that because when Irvington was established in 1870, it was its own town, and there a great deal of effort was spent to perpetuate that even after annexation in 1902 to the point where people identify with that place as a name. You have other neighborhoods in Indianapolis that they're fantastic neighborhoods, but their names kind of came later, maybe in the 60s. Butler Tarkington, for example, wonderful neighborhood. But was really kind of part of a broader area that most people would have recognized as being the North Side. And so as a place that generations identified with, that came kind of late to some of these areas. So I kind of ascribe it to that.
Steve, what was your attraction? You've lived in Irvington most or maybe even all of your life?
Well, the railroad brought my family to Irvington. My grandfather worked for the Pennsylvania. And when the Hawthorne Yards were created during the First World War. Many railroaders moved out to Irvington to be close to the yards, and my grandparents came out in 1927. So I've had a long relationship to the community.
Mm-hmm. Char, your relationship to Irvington is?
Well, I moved there about 12 years ago, but one of the things that I initially recognized right away was there's a close network of working and non-working mothers who really help each other in the community and help with each other's children. And I just think it reminded me a lot of a small town within a big city. And so you still get that feeling of community that you don't always get in other neighborhoods. And mm-hmm. that was one of the things that really attracted me to the neighborhood. But I also have always liked older buildings and older homes. And Irvington has such a wide variety of architecture that it's just not your typical cookie cutter neighborhood. And it's just very unique in that way.
You know, it is interesting in an era when we all feel so connected by social media to have this physical three-dimensional attraction to a place to live. The Irvington Historical Society was founded when, Steve?
1964.
Okay, so fairly recent. So there was a lot of archival research, I'm sure, at the beginning. Do we know the circumstances under which somebody finally said, we need our own historical society because there's such a rich history here?
Well, there was a sense of many of the people who founded the society were Butler alumni who lived in Irvington. And others who had come to the community, were associated with the Disciples of Christ, the Christian Church, that came into Irvington after Butler left. Butler was a disciples school. And when Butler left, the headquarters of the United Christian Missionary Society came to Indianapolis and located in the old College of Missions building. But there were people who felt that there was a need to gathered the history of the community together. Irvington celebrated was going to celebrate its centennial in 1970, and so there was a feeling that there needed to be a gathering of historical information and preparing for that centennial celebration. We had also folks who were wanting to donate things. They were cleaning out their attics. They were downsizing and found things that they didn't particularly want to throw away, that their family wasn't interested in retaining, and so they wanted a place to put those items for future generations to enjoy.
And what's the connection between the Bonnet Thompson Memorial Center and the Historical Society?
The Bonnet Thompson Memorial Center, the old Butler Library, when the Disciples of Christ were moving their headquarters to downtown Indianapolis in the mid-90s, there was a desire to reuse those buildings. And the library, the Irvington Historical Society, had indicated an interest in restoring the building. And through a cooperative effort with the developers of the entire site, we entered in a long-term arrangement with the developers to restore the Bonnet Thompson Center as the headquarters for the Irvington Historical Society and as a community arts and cultural center.
The architecture is neoclassical, would you call it? And it's the only piece outside of your just having identified what was the admissions building, which was much more mid-century modern, as I recall. Although that can't be because the campus moved before
this,
then.
What I was referring to was the College of Missions.
Yeah.
And the College of Missions
was built
in 1910.
Okay.
And is on the same property, large lot, with the Bonnet Thompson Center.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So, and is that indicative of what the rest of the campus would have looked like? Was there some architectural consistency?
Paul might be able to address that.
Sure. The buildings ranged in style quite a bit, and I would say basically whatever the popular mode of the day was when they built a new building, they used that style. So the first main building was designed by Edwin May and opened in 1875. And it was a brick Italianate building, about three stories tall with a cupola on the top.
And it was where?
It was where University Avenue used to dead end at Butler Avenue. There is now a memorial stone there with a plaque on it. So as you drive down that street, you're driving through the front doors, if you want to think of it that way. You're party crashing.
Then you're determined to get into Butler.
That's right. You want admission so bad, you're just going right through the front doors. Just south of that, there was a building we would call Romanesque Revival today that was Burgess Hall. That was the science building. It had a tower with an arched opening at the top and arched windows along the sides of it. It was brick and Indiana limestone. Mm. There was a women's dormitory from the 1880s. If you were a guy, toughy lucky, I guess, you had to find boarding in the neighborhood. And that really, as Steve indicated, created a lot of town and gown interaction. Students were boarding all throughout the neighborhood in houses. People were building double houses, duplexes, to house students to take advantage of the demand for housing. There was a small kind of folly building, a gazebo-type building that was towards Emerson Avenue. There were tennis courts, and then there was the Bona Thompson Library, which also held doubled as a classroom in some respects, as well as being the library for Butler. And for a period of about 14 years, it was the community's branch library.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh. So even more mingling of academic and town folk as
Exactly,
well.
Yes.
You know, to modern ears, you're saying there's a women's dormitory. It just seems natural. But we have to remember that a lot of women were not going to college. A lot of people were not going to college yet a century and a fraction ago. Butler and Irvington both have something of a reputation for producing women of note, as well as a lot of artists of note. And Char, we're getting into your area of expertise here. Let's talk about the artistic history, because there was the group of Irvington artists, which reminds me of the Brown County group, the T.C. Steele group.
Right. Well, there were several women in Irvington that were artists early on. And, for example, William Forsythe's daughter, Constance Forsythe, was one of the leading artists early in Irvington history. But Irvington itself has had a very strong history of being an artist community. And women were a big part of that, too, which you don't hear that much about when you talk about the Irvington group. But there still is a very large group of Irvington artists that are contemporary now, and we have a very diverse population in Irvington in general, and so that's reflected a lot in the type of art that's produced in our neighborhood. So I think that's one of the reasons that we're attracting that group of young people too to Irvington.
And the artists are diverse in the media as well. Painters, sculptors, fabric artists?
There are some fabric artists. We also have people that do poster art, as well as more handcrafted items like felted hats and tapestry throws and tapestry bags. And so we see a big variety of art coming out of Irvington even today.
Mm-hmm. And the public has a chance to see the inside of your, I'm calling it your building, Steve. I think you are a little proprietary about it, with the Gathering of Artists, which is coming up with a kind of a preview event on Friday evening, November 18th, and then the main event on Saturday the 19th. Where in the center will these art events be taking place? Is there dedicated gallery space?
It's all over the place.
Oh, cool.
once you come in the front door, you're into the gathering. The building is designed like a Carnegie Library, whether you have a main entry area and then two reading rooms off to the side. And so those areas will be just jam-packed with displays, as well as an upstairs area that's be available too. So,
would you like for me to talk a little bit more about that part of the display?
Char can certainly talk. She's been a frequent exhibitor there.
Steve is right that the whole building is full on the weekend of the gathering. And in the downstairs area, we have a lot of different areas where art is displayed. Sometimes it's mingled with with other pieces of art that kind of complement it, and sometimes an exhibitor or an artist will be there with a little booth area themselves that for just their own artist. For example, we have an East Side artist named Adele Schluge who works in the naive style, and she'll have her own display within the gathering. And so that gives people an opportunity to also meet the artists as well as just look at a variety of other things that are for sale. Some of the examples of things that they will provide that night are stained glass, felted hats, pottery, handmade dolls, poster art. We even have some homemade candies and jellies. And then we also have, in the upstairs area, we also have Irvington vintage items and Indianapolis vintage items, as well as some select vintage clothing items that are kind of for glamour evenings. And this year we'll be featuring some vintage items related, or some vintage, yes, items related to German culture and also vintage items related to Irish culture. There's also an area that will be what we consider homemaking items, which are vintage items, but they were all handmade in the past. And so there's a big variety of items to choose from. It's a great opportunity to Christmas shop.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, I see some holiday shopping.
And then we also have the Bonna Thompson Memorial Center has a gift shop downstairs, which features all of the printed materials put out by the Irvington Historical Society. So this is not just an event for women to come and pick out art. It's also for men and children and people of all ages
history
to
lovers.
Find something that they would love to take back with them.
My favorite part is the food.
Yes.
Sharon Gamble with Steve Barnett, Executive Director of the Bonna Thompson Center, Shar Ottinger, participant in the annual Irvington Gathering of Artists, and Paul Diebold, author of Greater Irvington, Architecture, People, and Places on the Indianapolis East Side. The Gathering of Artists takes place at the Bonna Thompson Memorial Center, 5350 East University Avenue in Irvington, with a $5 preview night from 6 to 9 on Friday, November 18th, and a free admission on Saturday, November 19th from 10 to 4. Soups and sandwiches will be available for purchase on Saturday from Allen's Catered Events. You can learn more at historicirvington.com. Again, historicirvington.com. Well, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
I know the spirit of Spirit in Place has been moving you all week. In fact, there's just so much going on that we don't even have time for a calendar that we usually call.
What do we do?
So instead,
we want you to go to spiritinplace.org and sift through the dozens of activities still happening through this weekend at the closing of the Citywide Spirit in Place Festival.
Very good. And we'll be back next week with more of
What Will We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Writing, as they say, can be such a solitary activity, which is why it can be so beneficial for writers to have an opportunity to get together and share ideas and their work with each other. This is exactly what happens at the Writers' Center of Indiana. Travis DiNicola spoke with their executive director, Barb Shoup, and also with Indiana's next poet laureate, Karen Kovacic, about their work.
The Writers' Center of Indiana is a community organization for writers, people who want to be writers, people who already are writers. We support all different kinds of writers and writing. We have classes, we have lectures, we have workshops, we do outreach programs where we take writing to senior citizen centers. We've been to the girls' school. We do summer learning projects. So we're really advocates for writers in a variety of kinds of ways with programs throughout Central Indiana and sometimes into the state.
You guys have a lot of different programs going on. How do people find out about, or where do things usually take place?
Our offices and our classroom are at the Art Center, Indianapolis Art Center in Broad Ripple.
You guys are sort of like behind the back.
Yeah, it's a little tricky sometimes. We're just a little bit behind the Art Center and a little bit north of it. But we're on that
closer
same
to the river.
Campus, very close to the river.
Yes.
It's a great setting. And you can visit our website, which is a lot easier to find, at www.indianawriters.org.
Very good. And I know that one of the events that you have coming up on November 29th is with Karen Kovacic. And Karen, I want to congratulate you on being named Indiana's Poet Laureate.
Thank you.
That's really cool. I know this has just been, what, a few months now?
That's right. Well, I officially take over from Norbert Croft in January.
Okay. So yeah. The official part begins in January, but you were named, was it late summer?
Yeah, sometime in summer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, and this is a really cool thing. I mean, you've had a lot of interesting honors of late. I know one of your poems was selected for the Cultural Trail for the work that's being done there. You've had some I was looking at your bio earlier, and of course, Creative Renewal Fellowship through the Arts Council and a Fulbright,
right.
and you teach at IUPUI. So how did this come about to be named Poet Laureate, and what does that even mean? Do you just get to basically like spend the year walking around Indiana citing poetry?
Well, it's a two-year term.
Okay.
And,
so for 2 years you get to walk around.
So yeah, for 2 years, yeah, walk, drive, you know, fly, I guess. Mm-hmm. Essentially, there's a lot of freedom in the position, and one of the ways I hope to make the position my own is to create a Hoosier Poets blog about Indiana writers, living and dead, who have left a stamp on our literature.
Mm-hmm.
I also plan to make a poetry toolkit for Indiana Humanities, formerly the Humanities Council.
Yes.
So teachers can download some lessons on how to teach poetry, particularly Indiana poets, in their mm-hmm. classes. And, you know, then I'll be involved in creating programming throughout the state as well.
So what is the state of poetry in the state of Indiana?
You know, I think it's healthy.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean...
That's great to hear.
Right. Well, I mean, in addition to universities being evenly distributed throughout the state and mm-hmm. creating a lot of literary activities on campuses, there are poetry clubs in the state. In fact, just this weekend, I gave the keynote address at the Indiana State Federation of Poetry Clubs,
mm-hmm.
It's actually a national organization, but often targeting an older population who favor traditional forms of poetry. So those organizations are quite active. There are local literary organizations that are not affiliated with universities, but that create publications and sponsor reading. So, mm-hmm. in fact, we have quite a lot going on.
So when, I mean, certainly as a poet, as a teacher, and now as the Poet Laureate, I'm sure... you know, people often approach you at parties or maybe on the street and say, you know, I'm a poet too, or I want to write poetry, or how do I go about it? I mean, where do you start with trying to sort of understand such a broad description of what poetry is in you know, sort of a response to that question?
Well, you know, I guess first of all, I'd chat with a person about his or her existing writing. I would, if the person's from Indianapolis, I would potentially send him or her to Barb Shue,
<Yeah, very good. laughs>
my colleague here mm-hmm. in the studio today. You know, oftentimes for my own students, I do suggest that they contact the Writer Center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a number of events, or you're putting on a number of events always. There are certain monthly readings that, mm-hmm. you know, people can take advantage of. There are writers' groups. You know, sometimes what people really need is an audience for their work.
Yeah.
And forming a writers' group can be a way to have that audience, you know, to get support, but also to get constructive critique. So
because it can be such a solitary activity, of course.
That's right.
That it's really mm-hmm. helpful to have, you know, that feedback and to chat with other writers, whether, you know, as far as what they're working on and as audiences, to get that sort of constructive criticism.
Right. And, you mm-hmm. know, I also suggest that they attend readings. And mm-hmm. Indianapolis is reading rich.
We are.
Well, Barb, she has just given you a great segue. So tell me about what we have coming up to look forward to that the Writers' Center is putting on.
Well, I will just add to what Karen is saying, that we do have some wonderful poets who are teaching for the Writers' Center.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Ling, who's a young poet, just finished a class to rave reviews. Sherry Wagner, is always teaching for us, and we have a variety of other people as well. And so no matter what level of poetry you might be working at, you'll find somebody that you can really enjoy at a Writer Center class. So I would suggest that you look into that. Some of the programs that we have coming up, our fall classes are kind of coming to an end. We have one more left that will be a wonderful class. It's called Storyboarding Your Novel with Kathy Day, who's a professor at Ball State. Mm-hmm. So anybody
We're
out
big
there.
Big fans of Kathy. And
isn't she wonderful?
And winner and
yes,
the work that she's
yes.
Done with,
and yeah. She's as wonderful a teacher as she is a mm-hmm. writer. So anybody who has any interest whatsoever in writing a novel should definitely check out this class. It's on December 10th. It's a Saturday.
Oh, excellent.
And it'll be good. She's very hands-on, very practical, and you will walk away feeling that you can do it.
So storyboarding a novel, I mean, sort of figuring out the overall structure of it?
Yeah. Kathy's interesting. She's about the only person that I know who's actually tackling the teaching of the novel at the university level with any kind of success, and she's very innovative about what she does. And while it's too late for those who want to do NaNoWriMo, which is the National Novel Writing Month in November, mm-hmm. if you're lucky enough to get a draft, you should come to Kathy's class and she'll help you figure out how to revise it, because all novels will need to be revised. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, and so that's a day-long workshop?
Mm-hmm. It's an afternoon workshop. Yeah, so that's great. And then we're going to reinstitute one of my favorite events, which is called New Year's Resolution Write. Everybody wants to write, but mm-hmm. nobody ever gets around to it. And so we all make New Year's resolutions that we generally break. So I thought if mm-hmm. we all, yep, there you go. If we all got together early in the year and we gave people a little sampling of some of the kinds of things that we have, it might, sort of give people a kickstart and make them more likely to keep going. One of the things I think is really important and that the Writers Center does very well is to help people find their own writing community. You can write in a vacuum all by yourself, but it is lonely, and you need feedback from people. You need mm-hmm. to talk to other people about your work and get some interesting kinds of reactions to it. So I'm looking forward to that event. That's always fun when we do it, and that will be on January 21st, also on a Saturday.
Okay.
One of the things I'm really happy about that the Writers Center has gotten involved in the last year or so is we're doing a lot of outreach projects, which I love because I'm sort of a teacher at heart. So in the last year we did...
Reaching out to people who are not necessarily coming to you as writers.
Exactly. But everybody has a story to tell.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we have some pretty interesting and successful curriculum that we use to help people draw out the stories of their lives. So two projects we did this year were with the 4-H Foundation and with Pioneer Village out at the State Fair. And I don't know how many people have been out there, but it's a really funny, interesting group of people. And then we do anthologies. So we did those, and now we're doing a memoir project at the Indianapolis Senior Center. We do summer learning programs now, which we have not done in the past. It's something new for us. So we're expanding in that area, and that's an area that I particularly enjoy.
Now, do you have classes or workshops on helping people, once they've written that novel or a collection of poems, finding a publisher or going professional with this?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. We often have classes that are geared towards a variety of kinds of publishing, and sometimes we also work with the Indianapolis Marion County Public Library System to offer classes mm-hmm. around town. And those are great. All those classes that we do with them are free. And publishing is one of the classes that, we help people with. We've got one that is for people who want to develop and publish a nonfiction novel. Mm-hmm. We'll have classes occasionally for literary publishing. And people are interested in that. And it's such an interesting time in publishing right now. A lot of people are self-publishing.
I was just going to ask you about that. I mean, what is your general feel about that? I mean, if someone comes to you and they're working on a book, and maybe it's a very good one, and they say, I really want to get this out there. I want to self-publish it. I mean, what's your general feeling about that?
I think you have to be very careful.
Yeah.
5 years ago, I would have said, absolutely don't do it. Now things have changed somewhat, and I think you have to be honest with yourself about what you want from the book and what you think the book might do once it's in publication. Self-publication brings with it some limitations in terms of getting reviews and getting in bookstores and stuff like that. But it is also a lot different than it used to be. The trick to it, if that's what you decide that you want to do, is you really need to do your research and know what you're doing. There are a lot of scams out there.
Yeah.
And you can spend a lot of money on a mediocre product that will not be reviewable, or even, you're going to have a lot of them in your basement, which is not a good thing.
And not even make your money back.
Yeah. So you just have to be really careful. But there are people who are doing it all the time now and doing beautiful books. And every now and then, there's that wonderful fantasy story where one gets picked up.
Sure.
You wouldn't count on it, but sometimes it happens.
It's a tough thing. It also means it's not just publishing it yourself, but it means doing all the publicity and all the selling and all those other things.
It absolutely does. And design and all those kinds of things. So we get a lot of calls about that, and I think that one of the valuable things that we offer is really reliable advice, because I really hate to see people find themselves in a situation where they, have spent a lot of money and are really disappointed in the results.
Now, are people members of the Writers' Center, or is it sort of a drop-in thing, or how does that work?
We have members. Mm-hmm. It costs $45 to be a member. It costs $25 if you are a full-time teacher, student, or a senior citizen, which of course you are a full-time senior citizen forever once you get there. But if you're a member, your classes are significantly discounted, and the programs that are pay programs are significantly discounted. Mm-hmm. So it's worth it if you're going to take some classes, and it's just worth it to be, to support and be a part of the writing community in Indianapolis.
Tell me again when that New Year's resolution
that is going to be on Saturday, January 21st.
Okay, good to keep in mind. Karen, let me bring it back to you just briefly. I know we mentioned earlier that you're going to be talking on November 29th. What's your main topic of conversation that night?
Well, the title of my talk is called Falling Through Time, Writing the Self into History. And essentially, this talk came about, first of all, because I'm a writer who has drawn on historical themes a lot. But sometimes in my classes at IUPUI, someone will say, "I hate history." Mm-hmm. And my response is always, "Wait a minute, how can you be a writer if you hate history?"
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially, my talk is simply, I guess, to encourage people to develop what I would call a historical imagination, and in sort of 10 easy steps. And it's sort of a how-to, but I bring in a lot of examples from Indiana writers and also writers outside of our state who have, taken some of the approaches that I advocate in my talk.
Very cool. Now, will that be at the Writers' Center?
That will be, we're in partnership with Bethel Zedek, Temple Bethel Zedek.
Yes, okay.
For that. So that's where that will be. And it's also the last in our series of craft lectures that have been funded by the Allen Whitehall Clues Foundation.
Travis DiNicola with the Writers' Center of Indiana's Executive Director Barb Shoup, and with Indiana's next Poet Laureate Karen Kovacic. Their annual gathering of writers is coming up on November 12th, as well as a lecture on November 29th featuring Kovacic. You can get more information at indianawriters.org, indianawriters.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4, when I'll chat with art educator Nate Heck about the videos he's creating to get kids excited about art.
I'll chat with the new Jordan College of Fine Arts dean from Butler University.
And I'll get a preview of what's going on at the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra this holiday season. Plus, we'll also have our Arts Calendar Week all.
What do we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in 3 first-class venues. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.